Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI urges the faithful to frequent confession. Zimbabwe's new prime minister vows to stabilize the country's shattered economy and end political violence. We hear of the gargantuan task he faces and of the widespread skepticism about whether he will effectively be able to govern. The Catholic bishops of Southern Africa ask the communities in their countries to contribute in practical ways to relieving the suffering of the people of Zimbabwe and warn that the situation there has moved from a crisis to a disaster to passive genocide. Sin is what puts distance between the believer and God, and it's the sacrament of confession that brings the two back together. This was Pope Benedict XVI's message on Sunday as he reflected on the Gospel of Mark, recounting of the healed leper. The Pope was speaking to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square before praying the midday Angelus. Charles Collins has this report.
In his remarks before the Sunday Angelus, Pope Benedict XVI spoke about the gospel account of the healing of the leper found in the Gospel of Mark.
In the Sunday's Gospel, we hear how Jesus healed a leper who came to him and pleaded to be cured. To those who turn to him today, Jesus continues to offer healing and strength. I encourage all of you to place your trust in him and to bring before him your hopes and your needs, for yourselves and for your loved ones.
The Pope used the gospel passage to invite the faithful to turn frequently to the sacrament of confession. The Pope said the sins that we commit separate us from God. If they are not confessed with humility and trust in the divine mercy, they can even reach the point of producing the death of the soul. He said that in the sacrament of penance, Christ, crucified and risen through his ministers, purifies us with his infinite mercy and restores us to communion with the Heavenly Father and with our brothers and sisters. The Holy Father pointed out how, according to the ancient Jewish law, leprosy was considered not only an illness, but the most serious form of impurity. In leprosy, it's possible to glimpse a symbol of sin, and that in his passion, Jesus would become like a leper, made unclean by our sins, separated from God. He would do all of this for love, for the purpose of obtaining for us reconciliation, forgiveness, and salvation. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Zimbabwe's new Prime Minister, Morgan Tsvangirai, has vowed to stabilise his country's shattered economy and end political violence. The former opposition leader made this pledge to thousands of cheering supporters on Wednesday, the 11th of February, after being sworn in under a power-sharing deal with President Robert Mugabe.
I, Morgan Richard Tsvangirai, do swear that I will well and truly serve Zimbabwe in the office of Prime Minister of the Republic of Zimbabwe. So help me God. I, Morgan Richard Tsvangirai, being chosen and admitted to Cabinet of Zimbabwe, do swear that I will, to the best of my judgment, at all times when so required, freely give my counsel and advice to the President of Zimbabwe for the good management of the public affairs of Zimbabwe, and that I will not, directly or indirectly, reveal such matters as may be debated in Cabinet and committed to my secrecy, but that I will in all things be a true and faithful member thereof. So help me God.
Mr. Mugabe, who administered the oath to his long-standing rival, has promised to cooperate in the unity government.
I, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, do hereby call upon you, Morgan Richard Tsvangirai, to take the oaths as prescribed by law.
However, there is deep and widespread skepticism about whether the power-sharing agreement will really work. The truth is, nobody trusts Mugabe, a ruthless dictator who has brought his country to its knees, a man who has managed to stay in power for almost 29 years, thanks to a rule of intimidation and terror. So this should be a moment of great celebration and hope for the people of Zimbabwe, and for Morgan Tsvangirai, a former trade union leader turned political activist who has emerged as the strongest challenger Mugabe has faced since taking power at independence from Britain in 1980. However, it seems to me that Tsvangirai and his Movement for Democratic Change party have been resisting this agreement for many months in the hope of securing a better one, one which would give them more leverage to actually make some change. But after months and months of negotiations, Tsvangirai's options were to agree to form a unity government or walk away from the process once and for all. He decided to bow down to compromise.
I do think that the global political agreement signed last September was in many ways a compromise document.
Karen Alexander is unit manager of the States in Transition Observatory in the Political Governments Programme at IDASA, the Institute for Democracy in South Africa.
And I think at this point we are still going to struggle with the fact that it creates two centres of power in President Robert Mugabe and then Morgan Tsvangirai as the Prime Minister. And I do think that in a sense at the moment, both from the amendment and the original agreement, Robert Mugabe maintains more power at this stage rather than, we're not seeing a split in terms of the power. But I think that really the NDC agreed to it in the end, mainly as a result of regional pressure. They were not getting the support from the region that they required in order to try to push for more comprehensive power sharing. And so I think what you're seeing is a brotherhood of liberation movements who do not necessarily approve of the NDC and are therefore making choices that in a sense support Mugabe. However, I do think that there was pressure internally for Morgan Tsvangirai to join this unity government. And, judging from people's reactions to the inauguration, there's much excitement from the people and some sense of hope that this is at least a step towards alleviating the conditions that they live with on a daily basis. However, the extent to which it is a real step in that direction is debatable.
You're saying it'll probably be very difficult for Tsvangirai to actually make changes to govern.
Yes, I do think Tsvangirai and the MDC more broadly are going to face difficulties as we move forward with the unity government. They are saying all the right things. Tsvangirai's statement about paying the civil service in foreign currency is a good move. He has four areas that he'd like to focus on in this early period, including food security, the national health system, obviously in relation to the cholera, the education system, and the civil service, as well as the constitutional reform process. And I think, those are fantastic agenda items. I think we just need to watch and wait a little bit and see to what extent ZANU-PF participates in the unity government in a spirit of compromise and in a spirit of power sharing. And I suspect that they may put up blocks and obstacles for any real movement by the MDC.
As I mentioned earlier, MDC stands for Movement for Democratic Change, the party with which Tsvangirai won the first round of presidential elections back in March 2008. The ZANU-PF party, on the other hand, is the one ruled by Mugabe, the man who won a sham runoff vote after that election, following months of violence and intimidation against his opponents and their supporters.
Now, Morgan Tsvangirai himself has gone through a lot. He's been subjected to a lot of personal violence. He's been banned from the country. He's been imprisoned. He seems to be very driven in his mission. Do you think he has it in him to take upon this responsibility?
You know, I think Morgan Tsvangirai has absolutely struggled for a long time in service of democratic change in Zimbabwe. And in that sense, I think he definitely has it within himself to last this transitional unity government. I think perhaps it's more about external factors rather than Morgan Tsvangirai's commitment and desire to see democratic change in the country. I do think that part of the problem he is going to face is that he's dealing with a man in the person of Robert Mugabe and a party in ZANU-PF that have a lot of experience in government and a lot of experience in distorting the processes of government. And so I think his principal obstacle is going to be the strategic mind of Robert Gabriel Mugabe rather than his own commitment and energy for democratic change in the country.
I did read a synthesis of the deal that was signed by the two men, and I may be mistaken, but I didn't see any mention of the rights activists, the MDC members, who do remain behind bars in Zimbabwe. Do you know what's going to happen to them?
At this stage, what we do know, or what we have heard, is that there was discussion between Robert Mugabe and Morgan Tsvangirai in relation to the political detainees. Our understanding is that there was an agreement that, you know, there should be a following of the due process of the law, such that certain people would be released if it was found that there was no case against them, and others would need to follow through and have a case brought against them, and that case would need to be heard before the courts. I cannot confirm that that is exactly what is happening. If that is the agreement, however, I think it illustrates way too much compromise on the part of the MDC. Because I think particularly with someone like Justina Mukoko, who was abducted in early December, the charge of treason is ridiculous. She runs an organization called the Zimbabwe Peace Project, and all they have done really is to track political violence in the country. So there cannot be a reasonable set of charges that could be brought against her. And I do not see that as a case where following the due process of the law is something that is a reasonable option, because in fact her very abduction and continued detention subverts the rule of law in the country. I think also without some judicial reform, it's difficult to imagine that any of the detainees would face a fair trial should there actually be a case that can be brought against them. So at the moment it is a little unclear, and I know that civil society in Zimbabwe in particular is really pressing for the release of the political detainees.
Now, Tsvangirai and Mugabe face a very daunting task. The country is in total shambles. It's collapsed. However, the international community says it will not lift bans, it will not lift sanctions, it won't send aid until they see change. How do you think they're going to make change?
That is a very difficult question. I mean, I think at this stage, you know, the reticence of the international community is understandable. Since the signing in September of the Global Political Agreement, we've seen almost 6 months of to-ing and fro-ing and non-compromise and non-agreement. And so I think their reticence is understandable. I think there are key ministries that need to be watched at this point, and I do think that the government must be judged in terms of action, not in terms of stated objectives. So I think in particular we need to watch what happens in terms of the health ministry, and obviously, of course, the finance ministry. I think Tendai Biti is a very strong choice for the Minister of Finance from the MDC, but he is going to face incredible obstacles because the Reserve Bank is still governed by Gideon Gono. And it is precisely his policies that have in some ways exacerbated the economic crisis in the country. So I think what we need to look for are sort of basic economic stabilization programs and reforms, as well as the restoration of basic services. So that includes the health system, but obviously also water and sewage services and electricity services. The trouble that they do face is I think that the country has very little money if it is not in fact bankrupt. And in some ways, actions taken by the ZANU-PF regime prior to this unity government have been funded either by commandeering foreign currency resources that organizations or individuals have in the country, or through suspect means. And so really the first thing we need to see is how they intend to finance any of their stated objectives.
Karen, thank you very much indeed. Just one last thought. I don't know if you even want to comment. I saw that Mugabe is going to celebrate his 85th birthday in a week or so. And to do so, he's ordered huge quantities of champagne and caviar and crayfish. I mean, has this man got no shame?
Yes, I must say, Mugabe's 85th birthday celebrations are a tragic reflection of, I think, how ZANU-PF feels both about its citizenry in Zimbabwe and about the responsibility that goes with ruling a country. As I understand it, they've asked for contributions from companies in Zimbabwe that are just extortionate, particularly given the fact that we have, you know, 90% unemployment in the country, and particularly given the cholera outbreak and the fact that people are not receiving food or medical assistance in that regard. So Mugabe's 85th birthday is a gross misappropriation of funds, and is something that could be celebrated in a different way. And you would have thought perhaps at this time Mugabe would ask for donations so that food aid and support for the treatment of cholera could be funded as a, you know, a contribution to his birthday or as a gift to the people in celebration of his birthday. But that's obviously not his top priority.
You've been listening to Karen Alexander, Unit Manager of the States in Transition Observatory in the Political Governments Programme at IDASA, the Institute for Democracy in South Africa. One voice that has been calling out forcefully for justice in Zimbabwe is that of the Southern African Bishops' Conference. Especially in the past year, during the run-up to elections, in the terrible aftermath of those elections, during the exodus of over 3 million Zimbabwean refugees, during the breakdown of the education system, of the economy, of the all-engulfing unemployment, when Mugabe actually stopped foreign aid from entering the nation where nearly 7 million people require emergency food to survive, and during the terrible and predictable cholera epidemic that has hit nearly 70,000 people. The Catholic bishops of Botswana, South Africa, and Swaziland have again and again called for Mugabe to step down and for solidarity with the people. This past Sunday, February the 15th, was declared by the Southern African Bishops' Conference as Zimbabwe Sunday, during which the communities of the Catholic bishops were asked to contribute in practical ways to relieve the suffering of the people of Zimbabwe. And yet again, as often has happened in these past months, the spokesman for the conference, Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier, agreed to speak to me when I called him up asking for news on the bishops' most recent initiative to help the people of Zimbabwe.
There were two bishops from the conference of the Zimbabwe Bishops' Conference with us during our plenary session from the 21st to the 28th of January. And they gave us such a horrifying description of the conditions that exist in Zimbabwe that we felt there was more needed than simply expressing our solidarity with them, and that we should get our people involved in offering whatever assistance we could. So it was really a response to a story that was very, very touching.
So exactly what, I asked Napier, have you asked people to contribute?
Well, first of all, we're asking for a day of prayer for Zimbabwe so that it's quite clear that the whole of Southern Africa is united with the people of Zimbabwe in seeking God's help to finding a solution that's going to turn the situation around in Zimbabwe. So prayer is going to be the first thing. Then we want to express our solidarity because of the absolute horrific conditions that exist there, the starvation, the sickness, all the breakdown in almost everything, every infrastructure that you need for a proper community life. And so a collection of money, of food, clothing, and medicine, anything that people would be able to put forward, we would take it and see that it's dispatched to Zimbabwe.
Cardinal, the bishops have used some very, very strong statements against Robert Mugabe and for the situation in Zimbabwe. I see here that they've actually said that Zimbabwe has moved from crisis to disaster to passive genocide.
That was a term that was used by the bishops who spoke to the conference members. They said by just standing by and letting the conditions continue at the level at which they were amounted to a passive genocide. It's just allowing people to die. You're not doing anything yourself to cause them to die, but you're not doing anything either to lift the conditions that are allowing them to die in that way. It was, I think, that statement above all that really got the bishops stirred up that we have to get some action and do it in a practical way.
You're not doing anything yourself to cause them to die, but you're not doing anything either to lift the conditions that are allowing them to die in that way. Cardinal Napier has just put into words something that I have personally been feeling for a long time. Just standing by and observing a people die means we all bear responsibility, even although we're not directly responsible for the situation. It's not the first time the bishops have called for a change, of course, in Zimbabwe and have highlighted the dire situation there. And Zimbabwe Sunday comes maybe in a time of hope, seeing the political situation in Zimbabwe seems to be changing somewhat. What is your hope for the new future?
Well, our hope is going to be that somehow the grace of God is going to get the better of Robert Mugabe and his cohorts that he surrounds himself with, and that this time they're going to put the interests of the people ahead of their own interests. I'm hoping against hope. I don't trust that unless there'll be some kind of an intervention of grace to change the attitude of Mugabe and his allies, that this thing is really going to work. I think the first time that Morgan Tsvangirai tries doing something that's going to take the advantage away from Mugabe and them, that they're going to stop cooperating with the whole initiative that looks at the moment quite hopeful. I'm hoping against hope that it's actually going to work.
Are you afraid that seeing the deal that has been signed, Mugabe may not allow Tsvangirai to actually go ahead and make changes?
Yeah, that would be my greatest fear. He has not been known to keep agreements in the past. This would be really an intervention of grace that would make him keep the deal this time. So, yeah, that's why I'm saying we're hoping against hope. And perhaps and with all the prayers going forward for the people of Zimbabwe, some kind of a conversion like that may actually take place. After all, I think perhaps St. Paul was an even greater opponent of the church and its teaching in his day, and he was converted by God's grace. Perhaps Mugabe will be a similar situation of conversion.
That is a very fitting analogy, seeing we're in the Pauline year, Cardinal Napier.
Because I have been thinking a lot about St. Paul recently and just what a remarkable change of life that was. And from being the scourge of the Christian community to becoming the champion of that community, only grace could do it. And let's hope that not the agreement that they made in September or the swearing in is going to perform a miracle, but that is going to be an even deeper miracle where Mugabe actually acknowledged the wrong that he has done.
We must pray then that he may fall from his horse as well and see the light. The people of Zimbabwe certainly need that, don't they?
They certainly need some relief. There's no doubt about that. There has been a fantastic response. Every time more information comes out of Zimbabwe, the people this end are responding quite very well. The other day I drove past near the cathedral in Durban, and there were about six trucks, huge trucks, carting something like 280 tons of foodstuff, clothing, medicine, so forth, up to Zimbabwe. I think there was a Muslim organization and some other community organizations that were working together in getting that stuff together and sending it up to Zimbabwe. So there's been a good response in different parts of the country.
So let's keep Zimbabwe in the news and in the minds of people. It mustn't just slip out of out of the light because some political change seems to be made. You know, the people are still suffering.
Yes, that would be my fear. That the agreement is now being put into operation. The swearing in has taken place. The government is now in position, and it's going to be taken that the problem has been solved. It's anything but solved. I think not even the political problem has been properly addressed. That a man could be beaten at the polls and unleash his forces in such a way that his opponent, who had won the first round of the presidential election, for the sake of the safety and the life of the people who supported him, withdrew from the election, and then he steals power, and then everyone continues saying he's the president of Zimbabwe. He's illegitimate at the best of definitions. I think that, for me, is one of the worst outcomes of this present dithering and dilly-dallying of SADC and South Africa, is that they've allowed a precedent to be set where a man can steal an election and he still gets recognition because he's got this title of the liberator of his people from the past. And that, for me, is really where the disaster of Zimbabwe comes in, that the precedent has been set now for elections to be won using intimidation, torture, and violence.
And as I put this program together, I learned from the news that the man chosen to be the Deputy Agriculture Minister in Zimbabwe's new power-sharing government has been arrested and is due in court to face insurgency and terrorism charges. The MDC is condemning the arrest as politically motivated. Zimbabwe's power-sharing government is less than a week old, and already it appears is being undermined by self-interest and political manipulation. Words fail me when I think of the predicament of the people of this beautiful and once prosperous nation. How much suffering will they still have to endure before change can really set in? And such basics such as food, health, education, and employment become realities in their lives and in those of their children. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.